This is Josh Larson here with the Think Christian podcast and perhaps our biggest challenge yet, proving there's no such thing as secular, even the Muppets, and floor is lava. I'm very excited to talk about the Muppets, specifically the new series Muppets Now on Disney Plus. And yes, we will get to Netflix's Floor is Lava too. But first, a few episodes ago, we discussed Christian nationalism, mostly as it pertains to the United States. And I had asked for feedback from listeners who lived in other countries, wanted to hear about their experiences living as people of faith and also citizens of a particular nation. Well, we did get a note from Rory Martin in the United Kingdom, who describes himself as the son of a Scottish father and Dutch mother, born in England but bred in Scotland. Rory described the UK as, quote, wholly secular, despite an established Church of England. And then he went on to write this. It is this awkward muddle that makes the relationship with my faith in Christ and country complex. Then again, it has also made me appreciate the Bible more. Most of God's people lived as wanderers, exiles, and sojourners. Abraham and the patriarchs, Moses and the Israelites, the Babylonian exile, Roman occupation, and most of church history. Jeremiah 29:11, in its proper context, speaks so powerfully. Jeremiah has the exact instructions that Jesus' church should obey, with the promise of prospering in Babylon, the central citadel of your enemies. I do appreciate how Paul handles that in the New Testament, with his grappling of citizenship of heaven versus the earth. That tension is felt so much more deeply by me than I would imagine in a Christian culture. Thank you for that perspective, Rory. Yeah, it sounds a little different from the American experience in some ways. And that episode Rory is responding to, God Bless America. On it, we considered Hamilton, which is on Disney Plus, and we talked about the recent run of Captain America comics. Be sure to check that out if you missed it and the topic interests you. This episode, well, some lighter topics. In a bit, music critic Eric Danielson will put down his headphones to chat about the supremely silly Netflix show Floor is Lava. But first, Michelle Reyes and I discuss the return of everyone's favorite felt puppets with the new Disney Plus series, Muppets Now. Michelle Reyes makes her second appearance on the podcast. I told you we were going to get you in regular rotation, Michelle. Welcome back.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's good to be back.
This time you're going to talk, of all things, Muppets. Now, I'm pretty sure you're younger than me, so I'm guessing you missed the Muppets when they first became a big thing on television in the 70s. That was my childhood.
Yes.
But they've come and gone over the years, right? They fade in and out of the pop culture landscape, and their latest is this new Disney Plus series called Muppets Now. So I'm hoping this wasn't your first introduction to the Muppets, Michelle. You've seen them in some incarnation before this?
Oh, goodness. I think one, you'll have to help me with the title, but I think it was something about Muppets and pirates.
Oh, sure.
Is there one about pirates?
Yes, there is. I want to say it's Muppet Island. Treasure Island. Yes.
Yes. Okay,
that was your introduction.
I've seen. Yes.
That is great.
I think that's the only one I've had, only Muppets show. I mean, I'm familiar with Kermit the Frog,
sure,
and Miss Piggy and all of them and their other, you know, reinventions. But in terms of formal movies, I think that's the only one I've seen. And it's been a while,
yes,
right?
It has. I was going to say, since, I've dated myself, yeah, so now I'm going to date you. Not quite as badly, but that was 1996, I hate to tell you. So you have missed,
goodness,
you've missed a lot of Muppets since then, I will say. But at least you have some familiarity.
I'll say this. I have small kids, right?
Okay.
And so Sesame Street, I have been watching for years. So I feel like I'm a little bit in the game.
Yeah, a little
you
bit.
You know, in terms of Elmo and whatnot.
Yeah, I think you are. But there are some distinctions. Maybe we'll get to why,
sure,
Sesame Street is great. Love Sesame Street, but Muppets are really my thing. We'll get to that.
Aww,
I want to hear,
okay,
what you think of Muppets Now. There's only been, as we're recording, they just started. They're going to release these episodes weekly, it looks like, on Disney Plus. So you and I have checked out the first one. What did you think of it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. Okay, so I'm going to be honest. I sat down and started watching it. It's running, and my first thought is like, what the heck is this? You know, and like you're saying, it's Muppets Now. It's the latest in a long string of, you know, attempts to recapture the magic of the Muppet Show from the 70s and, mm-hmm, find the resonance within areas of pop culture. But, I mean, the commentary, and there's the cheese, right? All the jokes, and it's this whirlwind pace. And
yes,
it's all a bit dizzying. And so I felt like I had to just pause it and kind of like take this in, because each episode opens, well, this first episode that we've seen opens with Scooter. He's hurriedly uploading his friend's short form programming to the streaming site. And there's a mention of Gonzo's survival show, which I'm excited about. Miss Piggy is like a beauty vlogger.
Yes.
Kermit the Frog's interviews. And I've heard that there's going to be a game show from Pepe the King and a not too late show with Elmo and a Muppets Labs field test, which I'm super excited about. But, you know, whatever mini show is being uploaded, there's some complication as other characters pop in with last minute requests or complaints. Kermit the Frog has this like whole list of complaints.
Yes.
The vibe is very much Muppets Takes YouTube. Mm. And the crew is becoming a network of forever struggling influencers. So it was very interesting, to say the least.
That is a perfect way to describe it. Muppets Take YouTube, because yeah, they are trying to, you know, be with the times, as Muppets always do. And so here it is as a streaming show, as Scooter trying to upload this, and he's getting these text messages. It is overwhelming. I will confess, I paused it too, because I needed to get my bearings. And that's always been a bit of their sensibility, right? It's fast, chaos, jokes that you'll miss because they're coming by so quickly. But yeah, this was a bit of a deluge there at the start. It'll be interesting. That's part of the conceit. That's part of the meta element, but it'll be interesting to see if it does settle down a little bit. I was relieved to see that it did keep, for me, that essential Muppet spirit. And I think this is part of maybe the Sesame Street distinction for me, is because the Muppets are never really about lessons, right? Where Sesame Street is at heart, and for good reason, about learning. The Muppets have always seemed to me to almost have this disdain for moralizing, and they just favor sheer silliness. They favor the jokes, the gags, and the chaos. So I think a really great example from this first episode is when Kermit is interviewing RuPaul, and just yes. when it starts to get kind of syrupy and maybe a little inspirational, and you're like, oh boy, Gonzo blessedly barges in. This is what he asks RuPaul. If you were sitting on a trapdoor above a pit of crocodiles, would you want to know about it? And there's just like this double take, right? Like, what are, even if you know the Muppets, you're like, how did we get here? And I love how that deflates the moment before it gets too saccharine, and it reprioritizes goofiness and just plain fun and puts that back at the forefront. So was there a joke or a gag or a moment that stood out to you once you were able to catch up with the show
and
put it back on play, something that you enjoyed particularly?
Yes. Oh, I loved, as cheesy as Miss Piggy's segment is, I loved every bit of that. And her assistant, right, that has this very droll
yes.
kind of monotone commentary. He's basically undermining everything that she's saying uh-huh. and critiquing everything that she's trying to promote. So you have this kind of double-tongued commentary going on. But the part where she brings on a celebrity and they're supposed to be having these like facial massage, and it's supposed to be like these little taps, and you know, the celebrity gets his taps first, and he's like, oh, this is so wonderful.
Taye Diggs,
and
right?
Yeah, Taye Diggs, uh-huh. exactly. And you know, and then the assistant turns to Miss Piggy, and she's just like smacking her left and right, and Taye Diggs has his eyes closed like, oh, just feel it, this is so wonderful. And Miss Piggy's like fighting back with the assistant now too, and it's so comical. That was the first moment in the show that I just like burst out laughing.
Good. I'm glad you had that moment. Yeah. And the lifestyle vlogger is a phenomenon that's thoroughly modern, but also totally in sync with Miss Piggy's personality, going all the way back to the 70s. So that fits really well. And you know, not only did I love the Muppets growing up, I had a chance, just as you're saying, you have younger kids now, Michelle, I had a chance to relive the 2011 movie with Jason Segel, just called The Muppets, because my kids were younger at that point. My daughters were 8 and 5, so the perfect age for something like that. And there was a little bit of a Muppets revival around then with that movie, and we all just loved it. And that was right about the time that I started at Think Christian, actually, 2011. So I was really thinking about what this no such thing as secular perspective could look like, wondering how far could I push it? Could I even include something like the Muppets? And I came upon this idea, the movie gave me this idea of holy nonsense that I want to talk about a little bit, that there really is, I think, a theological significance to silliness. I find that something like the Muppets and the joy it gives me, the way it made you laugh out loud, Michelle, for me, it's really reorienting. And that can be especially true during difficult times. So like right now, right? Amid a pandemic, amid blatant racial injustice that we're living in. It's a difficult time. And I think that something like this sort of silliness and joy can be reorienting. In some ways, you could say, isn't it a distraction? But for me, it's more of a reprieve or a reminder that God is good, that if there is grief in this world, there is also joy. I think of Ecclesiastes speaking of a time to weep and a time to laugh, and kind of bringing that balance back a little bit when we enjoy this sort of silliness. Frederick Buechner wrote in The Hungering Dark about joy a little bit this way. So I want to quote him. Here's Buechner. "Joy is a mystery because it can happen anywhere, anytime, even under the most unpromising circumstances, even in the midst of suffering with tears in its eyes." So for me, the Muppets and even something, you know, a short series like Muppets Now, it really does give me that sort of joy. It lets joy burst in to this current stressful moment. Maybe I'm overselling the Muppets, but that's what they do for me. I think that's why they're still resonant for me across all these years. Did you have a favorite Muppet, Michelle? I wanted to hear if there was one, either someone, you know, from Muppet Treasure Island you remembered and have always liked, or one of the characters in this series that you saw who you kind of connected with or just made you laugh the most.
Oh, goodness. Well, I think, and I'm trying to recall the name of Miss Piggy's assistant, but I think for me,
the dragon,
he was Yes, the dragon.
That is, I will tell you, it's Uncle Dudley. And I was thrilled to see Uncle Dudley because he doesn't usually get a big role. He appears, you know, here and there over the years, but he's not what I would say a Muppet main character. So this was a big moment for Uncle Dudley, I'm going to say, Michelle. Okay. So I'm glad you appreciated
awesome. It. Awesome. Oh, my goodness. His droll sort of humor. I just loved it. Yeah, and I think maybe it also reflects my own sort of views and opinions of beauty vlogging as well. So, you know, it's like that Schadenfreude, right? When somebody's yes. like expressing your like secret opinions about something, but doing it so blatantly and unashamedly, and you're kind of like just snickering in the corner because you feel the same way. I think I experienced that with that character, you know, and there's even a part where he's like talking about his beard and
yes.
like trying to...
His favorite feature, you know, I believe.
His favorite feature, yes. You know, I really like your idea of holy nonsense, because I think in the midst of this year, which has just been so hard on so many levels, from quarantines to national protests and racism and all the rest, I think many of us have lost our sense of fun and even like the sense of biblical fun. And you mentioned Ecclesiastes. I was thinking along the same lines there too. One of my favorite verses, Ecclesiastes 8:15, which just talks about, you know, the writer says, "I commend joy, and man has nothing better under the sun but to eat and drink and be joyful." And certainly joy comes first and foremost through Christ and a relationship with him. But I think there's also a theology of rest and play being mapped out in Ecclesiastes, to have fun and to not take everything so seriously. And I think that's one of the brilliance of Muppets Now, because on the one hand, it's almost eerie in the sense that even though it was filmed and created last year, it has so much relevance and reflection on the reality of us today, our kids today in the time of COVID and quarantines. As I was watching it, I initially read this as like an imaginative retelling of how kids are viewing their parents' digital activities right now, Zoom calls, online teaching, all of this, you know, texting back and forth and, you know, digital glitches and all the rest. The show normalizes that way of life while also making it accessible to little ones. But it was also a bit convicting because as a parent of young kids, I thought, is this what I look like to my children?
Yes.
You know, constantly in this whirl of digital activities. So I think it had that, on the one hand, that kind of convicting element to it. But then like it's all just sort of tongue-in-cheek commentary too, and just being able to laugh at it and not just to be that relief or that bomb to a somewhat serious and heavy kind of context right now. So in that sense, I think Muppets Now is quite brilliant in what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way they could have known that, of course, these things like vlogs already existed and Zoom calls and that sort of stuff. But the fact that it would be so in kids' faces as it has become with quarantining, as you're talking about, Michelle. And it's so funny you mentioned that about your own younger kids. I've had colleagues say things like, you know, their preschool age son or daughter will say something like, "I'm busy now," or "I have to go take a call," or "I have to go in a meeting and leave the room." because that's what they're seeing us do, right? And so there's something, yeah, by Muppets Now spoofing that in a lot of ways, it can be convicting in the manner you're speaking of, but it can also be affirming to kids. Like, this is part of the silliness that you are living with, and maybe it should be made fun of a little bit, right? Maybe you should question this reality that we're now all living in, which kids, even at a very young age, are smart enough to do and pick up on. Yeah, so there definitely is an added relevance right now. So you picked Uncle Deadly as your favorite Muppet, which I love. That makes me so happy, especially because mine is really generic. I just always gravitate towards Kermit because, you know, as much as I smile at the silly chaos and I would like to say Gonzo and identify with Gonzo, it's really the uptight frog who's trying to keep a lid on things amid all this chaos. Like, that's just something that resonates with me more, I have to say. So
the first episode ends with Kermit the Frog and his long list of complaints and Scooter just like, oh, I have a chair problem.
Yes.
Disappearing.
Kermit's perfectionist tendencies, let's say, coming out.
Yes.
And taking over. So, and there's, you know, a new Kermit. There's a new Kermit performer for this show, Matt Vogel. Probably take a little while to adjust to him. I don't think there's anything wrong in their performance, but, you know, it's a shift from Steve Whitmire, who had the role from 1990 to 2017. And Whitmire really captured what Muppet inventor Jim Henson did originally with Kermit. So that was a little bit of that head tilt for me too, Michelle. Not only the pacing of it, but I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't sound exactly like Kermit. So that's why if some other people check it out.
You could tell the voice distinction.
Yeah, a little bit. But even in the, you know, the puppeteering, there are some mannerisms. Kermit's crumpled face, I think it's one of the great artistic creations we have. And Vogel captures that really well. So that gives me, you know, makes me feel good about him taking over. Obviously, I'm in Muppet nerd territory now, so I should probably
give it a break and back off.
Is there anything else you wanted to cover about the show or your experience, Michelle?
Well, I will say, because I've been reading some reviews, I am definitely looking forward to the Muppet Labs segments. Apparently, they're field tests. Apparently, there's going to be a segment called Will It Melt or Will It Burn? You know, these like scientific hypotheses, right? And I guess one of the Muppets just replies like, fetch me a blowtorch. And
dangerous.
You know, kind of that let's stop learning, let's start burning kind of idea. But I think in that spirit of just silliness, one of the things that I'm looking forward to, and maybe this is reflective of my current cultural moment as a working mom who is now switching gears for the fall to homeschool. You know, we just let our local school know that my son won't be going in class for kindergarten. You know, this is going to be a very real scenario for us at home doing science experiments and, and all the rest. And I think for me, going back to this idea of holy nonsense and not taking things too seriously, like there's this pressure now on parents that we have to like teach our kids science and it has to be perfect. And like our children's intellectual development is on our shoulders. And just reading about some of the silliness about like, will it melt or will it burn? Like, let's go grab a blowtorch. I'm like, okay, maybe life is going to be okay. We can just have fun with this and see what happens and just laugh, you know? So I am actually excited to continue watching these episodes and even show them to my son and see his reactions to it all.
Yes. Well, please do build some Muppets Now into your curriculum. And we will be hoping and praying that that goes well for you. I know a lot of people are facing similar situations in the weeks ahead. So thanks for taking a little time out before you jump into all of that, Michelle. And I do hope that it goes well for you. Take care. Okay.
Well, thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
After years facing pushback from high-minded music critics that song Crocodile Rock was derivative, in the liner notes for his 1995 reissue of that album, Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player, Elton John said, quote, I wanted it to be a record about all of the things I grew up with. Of course it's a ripoff. It's derivative in every sense of the word, end quote. Way to own it, Elton. When I heard that the theme of this episode was going to be holy nonsense, after Weird Al, who I consider to be sort of my personal priest of holy nonsense, for some reason Crocodile Rock was the next song that came to mind. Maybe it's the nostalgia, maybe it's that John never bothers to even hint at what crocodiles have to do with rock and roll. The whole thing is nonsensical, but I remember thinking many years ago when I was listening to that song that Elton John, and so many other songwriters who use childlike images, whimsy, and nonsensical things to evoke a sense of nostalgia were, at least in a way, walking in the tradition of prophets who worked to remind people of who they had been and where they had come from and belonged. I think music can create a longing for a return to innocence, if we're not careful. Before I grew up and took on the responsibilities of adulthood, there was nothing I loved more than laughing my butt off. When I was a kid, I didn't know what half of these lyrics were or what they meant anyway. The whole world was nonsense, which seems pretty much like what it is returning to now. Hello, John J. Thompson, your official musical class clown here, offering you yet another specially curated Spotify playlist oriented around the theme of this episode, Holy Nonsense. It's another doozy, definitely designed to make you smile. It's a crazy diverse list too: Aretha, The Beatles, Offspring, Husker Du, Reliant K, Nirvana, Weird Al, of course, a few artists I guarantee you have never heard of, and The Main Ingredient, a band you might not know by name, but you'll definitely know their big hit, Everybody Plays the Fool, which you will hear a bit later here on the show, and you also probably know the lead singer, Cuba Gooding's son. Yes, that would be Cuba Gooding Jr. Fun fact of the day for you right there. So, turn that frown upside down and get thyself to the Think Christian Spotify profile. Not sure if you know this or not, but if you follow the latest episode playlist, it will update for you automatically. You won't even have to do anything. It will just be there in your Spotify browser waiting. I also create a separate playlist for each episode, and you can listen that way. And of course, you can listen to the archives list, which is now over 800 songs long. Can you believe that? And as always, if there's any songs that you think I should have included, tweet at me at John J. Thompson on Twitter, and I might add them to the mix. That's it for now. Until next time, this is John J. Thompson challenging you to a staring contest. First one to smile loses, starting now.
Eric Danielson is here. Eric, the first thing I have to know, was your first thought when I emailed you and asked if you wanted to watch Netflix's Floor is Lava and then come talk about it? What's the first thing that popped into your head?
My first thought was, now I have an excuse, because I had heard a lot of friends saying on social media that this had been a great kind of mindless pandemic distraction, and it sounded fun. I realized kind of as I started watching the show that I have kind of needed a game show like this at various points in my life. I've kind of had equivalents at other stages of life. So
interesting.
Yeah, I was just glad for the permission, I think, to feel like it was okay for me to have a serious reason to watch this.
Good. I'm glad I could give you the push then. If other people haven't taken the leap, here's the basic setup for this Netflix show. Each episode is three teams. There are three players on each team. And yeah, they're just trying to cross a room filled with lava. Now, I've tried to research what this lava is.
I don't want to know.
I don't think anyone knows. They're not spilling that secret. I think there was a Vulture article trying to find that out. And it's basically top secret. Obviously, it's not hot. It's more liquidy, but it is colored. And I think it looks slippery. But that's basically what the room is filled with. And then the producers have placed these strategic objects that offer possible paths across the room to get from one side to the other. It's basically a game of balance, and the team with the most players across in the least amount of time wins. So was this something, Eric, you played as a kid, a variation of this, or was this the first time you've heard of something like this?
You know, I was never the most, I'm a pretty mild-mannered, stay close to the ground kind of person.
You're kidding. I would have guessed that.
Yeah, I know. I really give off a pretty reckless vibe. No, I didn't play anything real close to this. I mean, I said this before we hopped on, that I think that there is something passed through the DNA, though, that every generation of kids knows some variation of game of like, don't touch the floor because the floor is hot. Don't let the ball touch the floor because it's lava, that sort of thing. So, you know, maybe kind of in smaller ways like that, but not in the more daredevil, you know, leaping off of furniture to avoid the floor kind of way.
Well, sometimes it depends what kind of house you grow up in too, because my younger sisters and I remember playing some variation of this, but it was definitely when my parents weren't home, because it did involve moving furniture, the couch cushions, sometimes like hanging on the walls and jumping over the piano and stuff. So yeah, it was definitely not something we were doing when mom and dad were around. I guess the basic question, Eric, and it sounds like it did check this box for you, was Floor is Lava fun?
Yeah, it really was. As I said a second ago, I think, and maybe it's because I'm not the most risk-taking person, I kind of started thinking back to different stages in my life and seeing how I've enjoyed shows like this at other points. You know, I'm old enough that I was like right in the target audience for Double Dare on Nickelodeon when that was a thing. And then in college, there was, I don't know how popular the show was, but I remember watching on some cable channel a show called Most Extreme Elimination Challenge, which was basically they took footage that had been recorded years before from kind of the most ridiculous Japanese game shows, and then they dubbed English narration over it
to make it even more familiar.
Ridiculous. Yeah. And so I think that there is something delightful to me about watching people kind of put themselves through these ridiculous challenges, but you know, it's kind of wish fulfillment of me not having to do it,
sure.
I think, while I watch other people kind of twist and turn and kind of contort themselves. So
yeah, and all of those you mentioned are in some ways spoofs of whatever the earliest version of the physical challenge show is. And I think Floor is Lava definitely falls into that vein. There is a challenge, but it's also having fun with the form. And so it definitely qualifies as nonsense to that degree. Holy nonsense? I don't know. We'll maybe get to that. But as far as the nonsense goes, I think it's key that the show is very aware of this, but not too aware of it. You know, it's not just skewering this form. The host, Rutledge Wood, basically he's just a voiceover you hear while you're watching the action. Very tongue-in-cheek. I like how he exaggerates the stakes, but still, you know, I guess respects them in some way. They're rooting for these people to make it across, even as they have fun when they do fall. There's that one moment where he says, wow, let's see that again, only this time accompanied by classical music. And then we get one of the many, many replays. Stuff like that reminded me of maybe my favorite Netflix unscripted show, Nailed It, that is having a lot of fun with the form too. So I think it's probably at its silliest when both the show and the players, too, make fun of the stakes. Early on, one of the contestants, when they lose a teammate, screams, "We will avenge you." And there was something very amusing about the team made up of the three youth pastors from California. And you hear Rutledge Wood, I think, at one point, just say something like, "The pastors lost some time there," in all seriousness. So there's, you know, just little moments like that. And I have to admit, I laugh when an adult is desperately clinging to this fake rock and then slides into this fake red liquid, never to be seen again. I hope the secret cracks at some point where they go and where they put them when they go under the lava, because that's something I'm still curious about.
Yeah, for sure. That was the one thing. I watched one episode with my son, who's 7, and that was the one thing that I kind of warned him about ahead of time. I was like, these people go down into this liquid, but they show them at the end. They're okay.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate what you said, because I think the nice thing about the show and what makes it, I think, possible to watch with your family if you want to, is that everybody's in on the joke. There's nobody who's really, yes, they do kind of reshow and make a little fun of, you know, some of the more outrageous falls, but ultimately they're not really laughing at any of the people, and the players are in on it when they do those kind of very dramatic reactions to their teammates losing, or they kind of shout funny things in the middle of it. Everybody's in on it, and I appreciate that it's not mean-spirited in that way.
That's true. And maybe that's the closest we can get to saying that this is a form of holy nonsense. I don't know. Have we reached the limits of no such thing as secular here, Eric? I guess in Floor is Lava, has the TC podcast met its match?
Wow. Now I feel like I need some sort of Rutledge Wood voiceover about the stakes here. No, I don't know. I mean, I think here's how I feel about it, I guess. I think that we serve a God who could have created everything for utility and yet made the world a really bizarre and kind of fun place. And I wouldn't want to overdo it and overestimate, you know, kind of the holy, you know, import of this show. But I think that there is something to be said for just enjoying the absurdity of the world around us in a way that is kind and not mean-spirited. And so, you know, I think we can obviously take, any of us who care about pop culture can recognize that we can take entertainment too far and we can distract ourselves to the point that we're not really engaged with the world around us. But I think that these little moments of breath and laughter and rest, it's part of who we are. I think that's baked into who we are as people. And so we might be up on, you know, a very wobbly table here, but I don't think we've quite taken it too far. So
not at all. That's something I think we can forget in theology is serious business, and rightly so. And sometimes maybe we get lost in that seriousness. Sometimes it leads us astray when Christians feel the need to be the moral police, I think. But sometimes when it's even rightly aimed, such as, you know, our righteous calls for justice, for instance, that's good, but that is serious work too. And you're right. We're in a created world that is even broader than that and wider than that. And even in the here and now, there is goodness, there's joy, there's laughter, there's silliness. And when we can rightly celebrate and experience those things, we should. I really believe that joy is going to be a part of the new creation. And so silly joy now gives us a glimpse of that. And maybe we don't need a show like this to have any more meaning than that. But just, you know, when we're experiencing that good laughter, righteous laughter, joyful laughter, it's a little hint. It's a little vision that we can kind of hang on to amidst the seriousness that we're also involved in and is a part of our faith too. So yeah, I'm going to say we justify talking about this show.
Yeah, I mean, and one other thing I'm thinking about just as we're talking is that, you know, God has a weird sense of humor. And, you know, we talk about the new creation, and I never really want to pretend that I have too much insight into what all of that is going to be like. But I mean, if we look at the world around us, animals, birds, fish species, you know, plants, there's some weird stuff out there. And God created all of that, you know, because it delighted him. And I think that those species, you know, and those parts of creation are not just going to suddenly become less weird when everything is redeemed, you know what I mean? And so I think it's okay to kind of enjoy moments of just marveling at how weird the world is and how weird human beings are. And I think, honestly, one of the nice things about Flora is Lava, if you want to use that as an outlet, is it's weird enough and silly enough that I don't think you would be tempted to let it distract you from more serious work. You know, I don't think it's the sort of thing where you're going to forget about doing justice or forget about taking care of your family during this time or whatever, because you're so enraptured with Flora is Lava. It's the kind of thing where you could watch it for 25 minutes and then set it aside and not think about it for the rest of the day. And I think, you know, we don't want to make a whole pop culture diet out of things like that. But yeah, I think having a few things like that around, I don't know, I want to revel in that weirdness a little bit. And this show certainly provides some opportunities to do that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to become so obsessed with this that they'll lose track.
I hope not. I mean, maybe there's somebody building a course in their basement right now that needs to be talked out of it. But overall, I think most people can set it aside when the show is over.
If anything, for me, you know, there's three teams competing at each episode. I think two would have been enough.
Sure.
You know, one brief episode is plenty for me, and the handful that I've watched, I have enjoyed. But yeah, not going to become my new obsession.
No.
Thank you very much, Eric, for taking the leap with me. And hey, if Netflix comes up with something like, I don't know, Ghost in the Graveyard or Freeze Tag, or maybe even Stick Your Tongue on a Frozen Playground Pole, something like that, I will have you back on to discuss it, all right?
That sounds good. And just so you know, I'll volunteer now. If they have more seasons of this and we need to get a TC team together, I'm more than willing to send Joe George into the room to try to figure this out. So we'll make it work.
All right. I will remember he's been nominated, unless we just do a virtual watch party of Flora's Lava. You know, that could happen too. So sure. We will see. Thanks so much, Eric. We'll talk to you again soon.
My pleasure, Josh. Thanks.
Okay, so your heart broke. You sit around hoping. You say you even thinking about time? Well, before you do anything rash, dig this. Everybody plays the fool sometimes.
Everybody plays the fool. Hopefully this episode has made the case that that's okay. Maybe even encouraged if you believe Christianity is a faith that has place for laughter. And in fact, looks ahead to pure joy, which silliness can sometimes point to. You heard the main ingredient there with the 1972 R&B classic. Clearly, this was one of the more fun shows we've been able to do. Thank you to Michelle Reyes and Eric Danielson for playing along. If you want to follow them on Twitter, Michelle is at Dr. Michelle Reyes, and Eric is at Eric Danielson. Our resident DJ, John J. Thompson, he can be found on Twitter too, at John J. Thompson. Let him know there if you have a track that you think belongs on the Holy Nonsense Spotify playlist he compiled for this episode. If you want to give that playlist a listen, just search for the Think Christian playlist on Spotify. Thanks again to Rory Martin for his feedback on our God Bless America episode. If you want to share some thoughts about the show, please send them along to tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. And if you want to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, we wouldn't complain. The Think Christian Podcast is a production of Reframe Media, a family of programs designed to help you see your whole life reframed by God's gospel story. Visit reframemedia.com for more info. Our audio engineer and post-production supervisor is John Reeder, and Reframe's co-director overseeing content strategy is Robin Baslin. Thank you very much for listening. I'll be back in a couple of weeks to consider how another aspect of our pop culture fandom connects with our faith.